Speaking of reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Enrico Belmonte.
Hey, Enrico. Good talking to you again. It was one of these short conversations before we hit record, and I was like, oh, that sounds like a good topic. So why don't you get us started?
Yeah. So, you know, Fred, I was discussing with some colleagues about the competencies that reliability engineers should have. You know, and it seems to be quite, a general topic. But, you know, what I was facing with those colleagues is that everybody has different opinion, and there are a lot of complementary competencies for the new reliability engineer that are relevant for them. And I would like to hear your opinion about that and seeing if we can, let's say, synthesize what is a good recipe for a reliability engineer in 2026.
Yeah. I'm going to sidetrack just a moment. We had a friend over the other night, we're making some pasta, and it was the recipe itself called for, three grams of this and 5 grams of that and 8 ounces of this and, you know, all these measurements on stuff. And I said, you know, I don't, Diane and I went to we use air quotes, cooking school in Italy for our honeymoon years and years ago. And the recipes we got there and the cooking style included little to no measurements whatsoever. It was just a pinch of salt and a little of that. And if you like it, put more in. If you like garlic, put more in. You know, it's, she had a phrase in Italian, which I don't remember, but it was basically, it's up to the chef, you know, what do you want? kind of thing.
And yeah, it's up to the culture, right? That's also something.
Yeah. If you learn to cook that way, then the quarter teaspoon of something is not something you would write down. You would just add it because that's what you wanted in there. But it's the same, I think, for a reliability engineer. If you ask one person, they may give you a detailed recipe that they have to be this level of competency with accelerated life testing, planning, and data analysis, and they have a master's at least in statistics and have all these resume filler type criteria in detail, you know, have 8 hours of on-hands experience facilitating FMEAs and all these things that would be symptoms of somebody that's competent is the way I think of it. But it ends up being very prescriptive. And Mojan and Diana did a podcast, and it was a little bit about, it's coming out soon, or by the time this episode comes out, they've already finished it. So what's the difference of working with a startup versus an established company? And the role of the reliability engineer is different. It's the same basic objective, you know, help the team create a reliable product. Yet you don't have all the assets and tools and funds and time in a startup that's under pressure to get something out versus an established company that's spending 2 years doing a new design. It's what makes, and then back to the competencies, is I tend to look at it as, you know, if you're in a group that really doesn't need to know anything about accelerated testing, you don't need that competency for that group, right? Mm-hmm. It would be nice to have, but if you're never going to use it for whatever the reason is, that style of product or that process, or if you're a reliability engineer in a factory and, you know, you might do data analysis, but you probably aren't going to do accelerated testing.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. So it's the competencies, I think, are a level above that. And it's things like the ability to learn and be curious and learn. And so that if you need to know that stuff, you can get up to speed on it. You can understand it and learn it and then help others use it. If it's data analysis or accelerated testing or predictive maintenance or whatever it happens to be, you can learn it. And the ability to connect it to the business, to understand the business model, what's driving decisions, what's important, where the value actually lies for the people you're working with. And the competency would be you choose to do the things that add the most value. It's your decisions are driven by what's the best interest to the organization and the individuals making decisions and your customers. It's what adds value.
Yeah.
And I think it's those two are to be the biggest ones.
Mm-hmm. Now, I appreciate your perspective. Say as a reliability engineer, competencies should be those who help solving problems, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like a problem-driven competence development, right? Mm-hmm. That's I would say I agree with that. But don't you think you need some really fundamental knowledge about reliability in order then to adapt them to the problem? Because if you are just say problem driven, you might not want to use accelerated testing because you don't need to do that. But it might be some cases where it's appropriate to use it. And if you don't own the competence on that topic, yeah, it will be hard for you to be able to apply it in a short time. You know,
yeah,
that I think
point.
Is a risky approach to competences.
Yeah, that's true. There is a floor. Awareness,
yeah.
I would say you have, I mean, a fundamental principle or concept or competency is that you know that MTBF is not worth using. That's if anybody comes in and starts talking about MTBF,
the only competence,
it's the only thing you need to know. Don't use MTBF and know why and be able to explain it to other people, and then you'll be good. You're good.
Yeah.
I forgot about that. That's cornerstone. Yeah, that's key.
Yeah.
But kidding aside, I think you're right, is if you're not aware of FMEA and accelerated testing and data analysis techniques and stuff like that, you don't know when to apply it, when it will add value to you. You have to have, you're right, I think as a minimum, you need to be aware of the range of tools that we have available to us. You know, but I didn't know anything about, you know, all these x-rays and CSAM and all these extra failure analysis tools until I said, you know, why is this breaking? And I went and asked somebody. I was just curious.
Yeah.
And we're like, why is this breaking? Oh, let's go to the lab and we'll take it apart and see what's going on. And then you learn as you go sometimes. But I think the curiosity, if you stop and say, is there a better way? And I think that dovetails into what you're talking about is, you know, you've got to be aware of what's available, what's going on in conferences and reading and Ascendo Reliability are all great resources to be aware of. There's other tools out there. There's things that can be used.
Yeah. Because, you know, reliability engineer is quite a unique a role in the organization because the reliability engineer supports the product development process from the beginning to the end. No?
Mm-hmm.
So it deals with requirements. It deals with the design for reliability. So shaping the reliability in design phase, then testing, and then monitoring reliability in the field. And so this is different from a simulation engineer. Simulation engineer is focused on doing simulations, in the early phase of the product development, and that's pretty much all. Yeah, I'm not saying that is, of course, I don't want to convey the message that the reliability engineer has more or needs to have more competence that simulation engineer does. But you know, reliability engineer needs to be involved in different parts of the products, the product development process. Yeah,
yeah.
I think one important point, or if, to my opinion, the most important part for a reliability engineer is that he or she should be focused on damage mechanism. Yeah.
Yep.
So, to my opinion, the fundamental competence reliability engineer should have. you know, because you know, then you can apply a lot of methods, yeah. But you don't need to become a methods freak, you know. Just applying methods over methods, you know, FBA, BFM, and also, it methods is important, of course, yeah. And I'm also promoting it in the organizations. But the fundamental. Say pillar is knowing damage mechanism, yeah, and knowing damage mechanism requires the engineers to know about the product, what we were discussing last time.
That's a good point. It's the, you need to know basically how it works or what it's supposed to do. It's back to that requirements document at early in the design phase, right? This light should turn green when this condition exists or whatever it happens to be, whatever your product does. And if it doesn't turn green or if it turns purple, you need to recognize that something's not right. So that's a failure mode. It's a symptom. Yeah. But the cause, is it a loose wire? Is it a wrong voltage? Is it on and on and on? Did we install the wrong LED? All of those then to get to, well, there's a fault somewhere. There's an actual mechanism of our processes that, you know, create and design the product, and then there's maybe a fault where it's a broken wire or corrosion or, you know, or fatigue or whatever. And we go to the table. I had a mechanical engineer tell me one time, he says, every time you show up, you tell me about a problem, something's failing. And he says, well, that's my job. It's like, I focus on what fails so that you can avoid it or design out of it, you know, and fix it. And he goes, isn't that depressing? You're always thinking of how things could fail. And I says, yeah, it does make getting on an airplane a little difficult sometimes. But, you know, if you think about how old the plane is, but I said, but we bring that knowledge to the table. Everybody else is working on how to get it to work. And you can't do that if you ignore how can it not work. They go together. And by focusing on mechanisms of failure, you know, if you put a cable out and you know it's going to be flexing and you don't consider fatigue damage to that cable, well, then it's a really, the design will tell us it's not working at some point. And is it something that's good enough or not? When we need to think through, there's a whole series of books by Henry Petrosky, I think his name is. Okay. Not sure in the first name, but he wrote one in the preface, and maybe it was early in the book. He talked about most engineers, when they're designing a bridge or an iPad or whatever, are designing it so that it works, and they're designing away from failure. And you and I have seen it when we work with an engineering team, and we show, you know, this is a problem, and it builds on that knowledge of understanding that this is a risky area, this is a fatigue waiting to happen or whatever, they will go, oh, okay, well, let me put a relief in there, or let me change the design, or let me do something. They are designing away from failure. And they will say they're designing so it works, which is semantics the same.
Yeah, but you don't have the damage mechanism in mind. That's, you don't focus on that. You know, right. if you design for reliability, you design against the occurrence of a certain damage mechanism, which is completely different from, say, I designing so that the part is working, you know, or the product is working. If you have the damage mechanism in mind, everything starts from there. So you need to define the requirement based on the damage mechanism. You need to define the shape, to define the wall thicknesses, the material, you know, and everything. And you know what you need to monitor. And I see, you know, in a period, in an area where people are focusing a lot of data, and I also working a lot on data for defining mission profiles and so on. Everybody is focusing on data, but you know, as reliability engineer developing a new product, you need to focus on the damage mechanism and failure modes, and then of course you can support your decision by using data, you know,
data and models and testing and all kinds of stuff. Yeah, it, you know, that brings up a whole nother competency though. And I know you and I have talked about it in the past, and Carl and I have written about it, and we talk about it all the time, is you have to be able to communicate. You have to be able to create graphs that are meaningful and get the point across, do proposals, make presentations, write plans, you know, facilitate a meeting.
Yeah.
You know, if you only are sitting in your office filling out, you know, Weibull plots and you don't communicate it to anybody, it's of little to no value, right? It's got to tie into other people making decisions, and we have to communicate to them. There's a failure mechanism here that we need to be aware of, and there's a damage, you know, model here, and here's how you can work to solve that or change the material or whatever. But if you don't tell anybody that, it's not likely to be useful.
Yeah. So I appreciate every time you say that the reliability comes at the decision point, you know, you need to decide, for example, new geometry or decide the material for a product. And then you are doing a reliability driven or reliability related choice. Yeah. And when you communicate, of course, you need to communicate it. And, you know, I also holding a training on, delivering a training on communication internally in my company, because I think it's essential for engineers. And engineers generally, they communicate really poorly because they are focusing on technical aspects, but when it comes to communicate it properly, they fail. That's my experience.
Let's be polite. They need to make some improvements.
Yeah, so let's say more diplomatic, but you know, the same thing. You know, but it's also about credibility, you know. It's also about credibility. It's not just communication, because communication over time makes credibility.
Yeah.
So it's not like you communicate one time and you say, okay, I will support this decision by this data, by this analysis. Everything is okay. But if you are doing consistently over time, you are enhancing your credibility. And after 10 times you are communicating in a proper way, the next time people will believe you, even if you don't present, if you don't provide a complete full, say, justification of what you're saying.
Right.
So basically, you know, what I'm teaching is to cultivate credibility through effective communication. And that is a support, is a soft skill, which is really, really relevant, and is not, basically, it's not taught anywhere in the
engineering
university. And I was asked also to deliver training on communication at university, because it's something that, you know, you have PhD guys, they are really talented, but they come to the company and then they struggle communicating. That's definitely something important. We said damage mechanisms, we said communication. I would say also, statistics, that's relevant, because, you know, when you talk about reliability is not
a probability. It's a probability of failure over time. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like when you have, I always make the example of the person sitting on a chair. The chair is going to break if you combine a weak chair with a fat man. if you don't have this combination, the chair is not going to break. You know, so this, how probable is this combination? You know.
Yeah.
And that's something reliability engineers should understand and communicate appropriately. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a challenge for many engineers in general, is to talk about statistics. And I agree that I have a master's in statistics, and it's one thing to say, well, here's the derivation, here's the formula, here's all this other stuff that we can teach somebody how to do a hypothesis test, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Why are you using it? Why is this the appropriate one to do? And it goes back to that credibility piece and all the other stuff. It's that we're aware of all these tools, and maybe we recommend doing a design of experiments to optimize this material choice or something like that. And having the skill and awareness of it combined with good communication skills then blends that community. And I think it's statistics is central to us. I mean, I think it's in the title, right? Reliability is a probability. But it's you can do statistics all day long and not influence anybody. You got to be good at it and pick the right tool for the right application. And it's the same with FMEAs or with HALT or with ALT or in statistics is woven into many of our tools and methods that we use. So, that's where if you're in a failure analysis lab, that's where you're working as a reliability engineer. Then understanding damage mechanisms will be the priority. Right? Whereas statistics, it may be good to have, but not as important. Yeah, it's pushing on the area, Enrico, of that, it's if you were going to set up a college course, we know that they should add communication skills because I haven't seen it. And the students I teach at Maryland, University of Maryland, are in grad programs, and they learn all about deriving all the different formulas and all the different equations, and they, do all these different modeling things of different systems and complex systems and Petri nets and all on and on and on. They learn statistics that they'll never ever use again in the real world.
Okay. So you get the theoretical, theoretical basis, but then you need someone that help you putting hand on, on the topic. Yeah. So having the experience of applying it. I was thinking also to another couple of competencies, Fred. The one important competence is the creation of the free body diagram. That's, I think, is something really special, for isolating the load and understanding the load path. Sketching the products and its interfaces, be able to understand how the force, or I'd say the current or the temperature, is transferred from the ambient or from the external component to the internal one. That is also really, really important.
I think your mechanical engineering background showing here, Enrico.
It's really, really important,
It's beautiful on the CAD drawing, but you need to actually, I think the act of drawing something out, then you're drawing the interfaces. That's what we're drawing. You're drawing the shell of around your device, or you're drawing the individual components and how they meet. It doesn't have to be perfect, but what you're actually doing is drawing the interfaces. And so focus on the lines, that's a good point. Good handwriting would be one that I would fail at. So I hope that doesn't come up.
That's me too. Me too.
There's a good number of competencies there. And the very last one I would mention that we should wrap up is the flexibility. You're going to be in an organization that says, yeah, we don't have the money for that, or we're in a system where we're going to make 10 of these ever. And no, you don't get 20 samples to run a test on. We're only making 10, and they cost $15 million each. So what else can you do? If you come in and say, oh, we need to do testing, and it has to be statistically significant and everything else what's the weakest point on this? Let's model that. And then let's do some confirmation testing with a smaller sample size that it behaves as we expect it to, and then move forward with it or whatever. But it's only once that I ever had more samples than I could use. And it was actually doing accelerated testing on zip ties, the little plastic ties that you'd wrap a cable to an attachment and it has a little catch tooth system that you pull it tight. And I had tens of thousands of samples for about $40. And there's no way I was going to be able to test all those, because it was doing a bunch of Instron testing on them. And so we're limited by test facilities. But on the other hand, you're going to be in a, you know, in a rocket business, and you might get to test fire at once before you start assembling it, you know? So it's, you have to be conscious of the business and what's important and how decisions are being made, and then pull and the tools and methods to do it. Yeah. Pull the tools and methods together.
Yeah, we're coming back to the problem-driven competences. Yeah, that's, I think, changing also company from time to time is helping engineers in general to adapt to different contexts.
Yeah, unfortunately, that happens a lot now.
yeah, that's a hard time. I would say I have also another a couple of topics I would like to... but we can keep it for the next discussion, Fred, if you
Yeah,
like.
And we can get some feedback from our audience here. So you know, if you're listening to this, what comes to your mind is what's essential? What's the core competencies of a good reliability engineer? So if you're going to hire somebody, or if the stuff you use on a regular basis, you know, what? How do you figure out what you need and what is essential for us to be successful as reliability engineers? Let us know. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. There's a couple of ways to get in touch with us. And you could also get a hold of Enrico or I or the other hosts of the show through our about pages or on LinkedIn. And I actually got a message just this morning my about page, and it was dealing with what do you do when your organization will only let you have one sample, and they say that's good enough. So we'll talk about that some other time.
Thank you for having the discussion.
Yeah, well, thanks, Enrico, so much for bringing it up, and so we should probably write this down somewhere.
Yeah, that's definitely a good idea. Thank you, Fred.
All right,
bye.
Talk to you later.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.